Florida State versus Florida. Michael, it is rivalry week. It is the Sunshine Showdown. And I know that we're really probably just more excited to get this game over with and move to on from this terrible season, but it's still rivalry week, man. And it still gets your juices flowing, still gets you a little bit excited here because you never know. You know, as they say, throw the records out of the window, bring the trash talk in, because it's that's what rivalries are all about. That's what makes college football fun. I got my Stomp the Chomp shirt on for those of you watching on YouTube. We might get our foot caught in the alligator's mouth this year when we're trying to stomp the chomp, but it's okay, man, because we've got them the last 2 years. But, you know, the trash talk has fired up, so I'm excited to talk about this one. Gator fans have come out of the woodwork now that they're actually bowl eligible again. You know, they have been all in our comments on social media. I've never seen a fan base so proud to win six games, but they got some momentum, man. I forget. You know, it's funny, like, when you talk about rivalries and against Florida State, you know, we're kind of like Miami's, we're their Super Bowl, right? We're all they got. I know they get a little heated with Duke and stuff, but, you know, Florida, they got other things to keep them busy throughout the year. Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, they go back and forth with them. You almost forget about how much you don't like the Gators until it's time for us to play, because then they come back. You know, that is, they really are kind of like the Dollar General of fan bases, right?
Yes.
So you have seen the jorts out, and the jort army is out in full force this week. So they're Billy, you know, Sunbelt Billy's got the guys riled up. So, you know, it's going to be a fun one, man. Inside Duke Campbell Stadium, I'm going to be there. I know you're traveling for Thanksgiving with family, so I'm enjoying that time. But, yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to it. So we're going to jump into this one. But before we do that, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me.
Thank you for joining. Thanks for having me. I mean, geez.
I sprung that one up on you a little bit.
Of all the comments we've talked about this season, that's probably the best dig I've heard all season. So that's really good. No, we're good. Yeah, we're traveling for Thanksgiving. So unfortunately, we won't be able to be there in stadium. But you know me, I'll find a way to watch the game. You know what's interesting? I was thinking about this. In 2007, I was in Columbus, Ohio, hanging out with some friends. And this was like, you know, Florida State had been, you know, kind of in that lost decade towards the end of the Bobby Bowden season. I think at the time they were bowl eligible, but they had to play Florida. And for some reason, you know, Florida had been dominant most of the year. For some reason, I walked into that game believing, like, oh, you know what? I think Florida State's going to do it this year. Florida State is going to go into Gainesville and whoop the Gators. I was feeling it. I had this thing. And I remember sitting in Columbus, Ohio with my friends watching this game. Florida beat Florida State 45-12 that game. You know, I was kind of having the same feelings about going into this game. Like, you know, even though Florida State's 2-9, whatever it might be, Florida is not that great of a team. They should have a shot at winning this game. And then the spread came out.
Yeah. Which actually, you know, wasn't as bad as I thought, right? 14.5-point favorite. I would have thought it would have been a little bit bigger than that, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And so I don't know if Vegas thinks that this game is going to be a lot closer than the experts think. I mean, anybody that's looking at this game, anybody that's watched these two teams over the last several weeks would say that Florida seems like far and away the better team than this Florida State team. This Florida State team, you know, up until last week, hadn't scored more than 21 points on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
It took a terrible Charleston Southern team for them to even get over 21 points. And so you look at Florida, who's coming off of wins against back-to-back against LSU and Ole Miss, you would think like, oh, they're going to come into Duke Campbell Stadium and pound them. But, you know, Vegas, man, Vegas don't mess around with these things. So, yeah. Something tells you something's in the air.
Yeah, and I mean, while I don't think either one of us are going to pick Florida State to win, I think as long as it's a good game, and you know, right. You never know what happens when you can get a team into the fourth quarter with a game. So we'll just see. I just hope they play hard and make it a good game. We're going to talk a lot about that game coming up in this one. I think it's going to be fun, 7 p.m. at nighttime. I expect Florida fans to show up. I expect Florida State fans to actually have a decent showing in this game. I know it was very slim for that Charleston Southern game. I know it's Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving to those who will be watching this around that time. Before we talk about all this, let me bring you a word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. You guys know they have elite gear. They've been rocking with us for a while. If you're going to be in Tallahassee for the game, 1415 Timber Lane Road is the location. If you're not going to be in town for the game, you can always shop online at alumnihall.com, navigate over to the FSU page, and make sure that you use code SPEAR to save 10% on some gear. You know, Christmas is coming up, so you're going to want to shop for every Noel fan in the family, and they have you covered. So make sure you check those guys out, alumnihall.com, 1415 Timber Lane Road, and use code SPEAR to save 10%. So, Michael, we're going to talk a lot about this Florida game, but there's a couple of things that I want to address before we get into that. Some of the things from the coaches' comments and the pressers and things like that, because, you know, we joke about the season being over after this and how we can't wait for this nightmare of a season to end. And it's on the doorstep, right? It is. We are really close to this thing being over. And I know that's what we all want. But, you know, with no bowl or anything like that, as soon as that clock strikes zero, really a more important season comes up, because how you perform in this offseason is really going to define how 2025 shakes out. And so you're going to have a lot of movement coming up. There's going to be a lot of things to watch for. So, like, although the season is going to be over, the news cycle is just getting started, because you're going to have the announcement of probably more coaches being let go. From what I've heard, it's going to be, again, like kind of that, you know, that Fresh Prince meme that we always talk about, where Will's like the only guy in the living room, because they're going to clean house from what I'm understanding here. And so you're going to have a lot of those announcements. You're going to have a lot of players that are going to be announcing they're entering the portal. Now, the portal doesn't open until December the 9th, but of course, you know, a lot will announce their intentions to go. And that's where I kind of want to start, is you're going to have a lot of kids leaving. And one of the things that was talked about in the press conference with John Papuchis this week was comments on how Pat Payton thought this was going to be his last season in Tallahassee. The plan was always 3 and out. But they don't know if that's going to be the case because of the way things went. I mean, not only has it been bad on the field for Florida State, the team that he plays for, his production has fallen off a cliff since you have not had Jared Verse on the other side. And so I think it's interesting when you look at not just Pat Payton. And I do want to first say that when you talk about going to the NFL, now there you'll have players that are going to enter the portal not going to the NFL. Obviously, they're going to look for other opportunities, other places. But when you talk about some of the guys who are NFL caliber, and look, guys, I know we're bad, but there are still NFL teams don't care about the win-loss column in college. Look at Anthony Richardson. He was, the first overall draft pick on a terrible Florida team because of what they projected he can be, his physical tools. You still are going to have some guys test the waters in the NFL here. But I do think there are some guys that you have an opportunity to talk them into coming back because they maybe could improve their draft stock. And we saw a lot of that happen last year with Jared Verse and a lot of these guys that thought they could come back and improve their draft stock. And I think that will help you for 2025, because there are some guys that, let's be honest, because of the way recruiting has went, you're going to need to retain some of these guys. And so I think really the focus going into this offseason needs to be on retaining a lot of this young talent, the ones that we've seen, the Luke Kroman Hawks, your two young tight ends. You really need to focus on getting those guys back. BJ Gibson, Hakeem Williams. Right. A lot of these guys are ones that you really need to put the focus on getting them back. I think there's going to have to be some tough conversations, Michael, with guys like Pat Payton. You know, that defensive line, as we know, has been rumored, and I can't confirm or deny this, but they've been rumored to be a $2 million defensive line.
Right.
I don't think you pay $500,000. I don't know how they split the money up, but I don't think you pay $500,000 to get, what did we say the other day? It was 4 sacks and 16 total tackles. I think it was, we said, $125,000 per sack and $32,000 per tackle or something like that. I don't think you do that. And so what worries me, though, is that we're going to make some dumb decisions in the offseason, and we are going to do that. We are going to overpay to bring back some non-productive players from our own roster. And so, man, again, like, as this clock hits zero, there's going to be a lot of tough conversations that are going to have to be had with guys you want to keep, guys you need to tell to go. So you're going to have some that you're going to hate to see go. And then, you know, there's going to be some that they're going to try and retain. But, man, there's going to be a lot of action coming up after this clock hits zero on Saturday against Florida.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think, you know, this is a part of the season where now this has become a regular habit, where once the season hits zero, once the clock hits zero on the season, especially if you have no bowl or playoff or championship game aspirations, like, you know, kids are going to start to declare what they're going to do next season, which is good for you. I think this is actually the best thing for Florida State in this instance, because it'll give them an opportunity to get a head start. Where, remember last year, this, when we talked about this at the beginning or at the middle of the season, what went wrong and how, what played into what went wrong this season, one of the things was is that you know, they didn't get a chance to really get into the portal to evaluate very well because they had to prepare for the Orange Bowl. They had to deal with the snub of the College Football Playoff invitation. They had to deal with all that stuff. And so now,
and didn't they have wasn't that part of the sanctions too? Is they couldn't get into the portal right away too. So they were late. Yep, that's a good point.
Yep, they were late to get into that. And so now you get the kids who are going to declare early. You get to have those conversations early. Then you get to get, you know, kids who are declaring for the portal, even though they're not officially in the portal. Let's be real. You're contacting their grandmas, uncles, cousins, second grade teacher.
Yeah.
You're getting a hold of them to start having those preliminary conversations about whether or not they'd be interested in coming. You're doing the evaluation. Plus, at the same time, this is crazy. Is what we've been saying all along is that we feel like Mike Norvell is going to clean house, if not at worst, clean most of the house. And so now you're having to hire analysts, you're having to hire new recruiting staff, you're having to hire, you know, I think the strength and conditioning team is pretty safe from what I understand.
Yep.
You're getting new coaches in, coordinators, position groups. So there's so much turmoil and chaos that's happening right now. So it's great that you have an early start on that now, versus when the other teams who are kind of trying to do it, but also trying to prep for bowls, also trying to prep for championship games, also trying to prep for the College Football Playoffs. So you get an early start on that as well, too. And then the thing I'll say, and I'll throw this back to you, is that on the roster management conversation, listen, you're going to have some of these players, you know, we heard rumors that Pat Payton and them, we saw it, you know, held Florida State over basically a knife to say, if you want us, you got to pay more. I think this year, there are going to be some of those players who performed well this year that, yes, you should, you know, maybe give them a little bump to try to keep them. But, man, if a Pat Payton comes back and says, listen, I want to come back, but you're going to pay me this much more, bye.
Yeah.
Good luck. Because you saw what it did this year. You paid them more, and you got worse performance than you did last year. You cannot be held hostage again this year. You've got to, Mike, you got to be strong. Battles in, you got to be strong. You got to say, no, we're going to spend the money to go get difference makers for next year, to go get an offensive line, to go get probably a quarterback somewhere, to go get some defensive linemen. Like, we're going to spend the money where we actually need it, with people who have proven to be successful and did not, you know, have a terrible season this past season.
Yeah, no, I 1,000% agree. Like I said, I think this year they have to be more stern in their conversations. They have to be willing to let people walk, especially if it's people who, you know, and I don't want to single anybody out here because I don't know, I'm not inside the locker room every week, but if it's a guy who wasn't productive and is possibly a culture killer too, then I think, man, you got so much to fix that you're going to have to make those tough decisions. And so, yeah, I agree. And like you said, you can get that early start into the portal. Because where last year they were so late getting a jump because, you know, the sanctions with Alex Atkins and the recruiting things, like, I don't think they could get in the portal for like the first week. So they were late to the jump to begin with. They made some missteps, and I hope that they learn from that.
Yeah.
But I do think one of the good things, I will say this, is even despite the season, you know, you've seen multiple teams that are doing much better than Florida State have guys that have already, like, basically opted out of the rest of the season and to be like, hey, I'm going to be in the portal when the season ends. You haven't seen that from Florida State. So I do like that as well, that you're at least seeing the guys stay engaged because, you know, as bad as the season has looked, there's a million different directions you can pull to say why it has been terrible. But I do think that there are some young, talented guys that you're playing a ton of freshmen right now. And these snaps, this is something we talked about in the post-game show after the Charleston Southern win, was these snaps will be invaluable going into next year. Because at the end of the day, I understand Charleston Southern is terrible, but it's still college game experience. And so there are some things that you see that you can build around. Like, you know, Amari Williams and Landon Thomas, they did it against Clemson. They looked good against Charleston Southern and Clemson. They looked good against good competition. So getting them these reps will help for next year, but you need to keep those guys. You don't. Right. You're building right now for 2025. So if those guys walk out the door, all this was for nothing. The youth movement was for nothing. And so that should be the focus, is keeping that young core nucleus of guys. And then, I mean, you're going to have to bring in 30, 40, if not more players from the portal to try and really infuse this roster with talent. So, I mean, I think they need to hit it early and hit it hard. And you know, last year we saw a lot of, like, we were second places or we didn't want to pay what they were asking. Man, you're going to have to step up to the plate this year because you can't have the situation happen again.
Right. Well, and I just want to say to No Nation out there listening, listen, I know we all, every one of us, we here at Plant the Spirit, everyone, we know high school recruiting has got to get better. High school recruiting has got to be the bedrock of this program moving forward. If we're going to have sustained success, we have to be better at high school recruiting. But let's just go ahead and get the frustrations out now. This class coming up is going to maybe be a 10 high school class. It's probably going to be only 10 kids from the high school. Maybe even if we're lucky, even that. It's going to be a heavy portal class. You're looking at least minimum, probably 20, 30, maybe even upwards of 40 players coming in from the transporter to completely flip this, at least most of the roster again. Now, don't get me wrong. We have a good core of young players on the roster now. But you've got to bring in some dynamic offensive linemen. You got to go pay high dollar for them. You got to go get a defensive line that's going to be, you know, better than what we saw this past season. And you might have to go pay for a portal quarterback if whoever your offensive coordinator in doesn't bring a quarterback with them or doesn't see in Luke or Brock quarterbacks that can run the system and be successful in this first year. So let's just go ahead and get the frustrations out. Let's go ahead and be mad about it. But it's got to happen. And then what you want to see is towards 2026, 27, 28, you want to see the high school start taking over, having more high schoolers than you have portal kids coming in.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you got to see the flip at some point. But this year it's going to be very heavily portal. And and I want to touch on the quarterback situation a little bit because this has been a contested topic. You're either with it or you're not. And I do think what you see in this Florida game from Luke is going to be big because, you know, he looked good against Charleston Southern, but you can't base 2025 off of beating a one-win FCS team and looking good in that game. You know, if he comes out and he lights Florida up, I don't know that it's going to happen, but if he comes out and lights Florida up, then, okay, maybe you can roll with him in the next season. But I think the problem is you want to keep Luke. I think you're going to lose Brock more than likely because this has kind of told you who they're rolling with, who's going to be their guy going forward. So you're probably going to lose one of those. You have the quarterback, the guy that just flipped from Oklahoma, committed in this class. But I think you do need to at least see who's available in the portal because I think the problem is, and this is where my thought process was with the portal quarterback, is I like Luke. I think Luke is your future. I think he could use another season of experience. Again, it's hard to judge what he can do behind this crappy offensive line with not great receivers. But the problem is in 2025, there is so much pressure to win on this staff and on this program that I don't know that you can take a lot of chances with we hope Luke's going to be good enough and then he turns out to just be okay. I think if you can get a surefire hit in the portal, you got to. You just have to. And, you know, if Luke's good enough, he can beat him out and he can just sit on the bench. It is what it is, man. But I think I definitely think with the portal quarterback, I like Luke. I'm okay with developing Luke, and I'm okay with Luke starting next year if he looks good enough next season. But I think if someone comes available and the interest is there, I think you got to kick the tires on it because you have to win next year. And like you said, the system will depend on who the new offensive coordinator is. I think Luke can be perfectly fine in the go-go. We're going to talk a lot about the go-go. You know, if that ends up being the hire, we'll go deeper into that. But yeah, man, I think because of the pressure that you're in, you can't risk a developmental year. You have to go out and get surefire players from the portal, and quarterback is one of those positions. Now, with that being said, I'll kick it back to you. If you're talking about Thomas Castellanos versus Luke Cromenhawk, no, give me Luke. But if you have like a Cam Ward versus Luke Cromenhawk come in the portal, man, I think you got to jump for it because you got to win in 2025.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Listen, I'm not for you and I have both talked about this. We've seen the Thomas Castellanos projections to Florida State and all of that because of the, you know, Marion offense coming here. No, I'm not for that. I'm not advocating for that. I don't think you get him. He's not a proven winner. Though he can run, you know, he's a great dual threat quarterback. He's not as a great passer, but he can run. That's not what we're talking about. We're saying there's a surefire. This dude wins games. He's got a great arm. He's got a better to great, you know, touchdown to interception ratio. He's a proven winner, and he just wants to go somewhere where he has a chance to showcase that more for the NFL, be an opportunity to play in a conference championship, opportunity to get into the playoff, and he is far and away better than Luke has on your team. If that comes in the portal and it fits the system of whatever coordinator you're bringing in, yes, you got to go for it. But that's a high order. And if it's not that high, then I think you stick with Luke and you do what is necessary to develop him and get him ready for the season.
Yeah. And so with that being said, let's touch on a couple of the other offseason news. Just a couple of quick updates for the coaching search here. Again, guys, this is still very much TBD. Mike is playing it close to the chest. We're not really hearing a ton of stuff here. But from what we're seeing so far, look, all signs point to Brandon Marion is still the guy at OC unless he takes a head coaching job, which the problem is you're starting to see these open up now. Obviously, Tulsa just became open. I don't think he's going to get a job like North Carolina, which if you haven't seen the news already, they just fired Mac Brown. Right. You got Florida Atlantic is open too. So the more coaching jobs that you see pop open, the more the risk is that you're not going to get him because he is an up and comer. So we're going to keep our eyes on that, but I do still think that it is his to lose or choose to do something different. I will say one thing about it is when you look at what Atkins was paid as the offensive coordinator at FSU, it's about what some of these head coaches at a G5 or lower school made. So, you know, from a money and a prestige standpoint, I understand Florida State's not doing good this year, but man, imagine if you come in here as Brandon Marion and you help turn this team around in 2 to 3 years, you're right in the playoffs making a mil plus a year. You're probably going to get a head coaching Power 5 job just as fast as you would spending a few years at Tulsa where you really don't know what's going to happen.
Correct.
If you can turn that around or not. Now, I know every coach wants to be a head coach, so that's obviously going to be big there. One of the things that I have heard rumored is that Mike Norvell is kind of expected to give up play calling duties depending on who they get at the offensive coordinator position. Now, that depends. If you get one or two, maybe three, if you have to go to option 4, 5, or 6 because of for whatever reason, you may see him have to, you know, he may not trust them to be the play caller. But I do think that is something that he's willing to give up, which I like to see. We've talked about how we want to see him in that CEO role to be able to monitor all aspects of the program. You are at least happy that he's willing to change, right? He's not mm-hmm. too proud to give that up. But I do think that tells you that, you know, there will be some change in the offense next year, whether it be Brandon Marion. If he doesn't take it, who's going to be that next guy? You know, right. Could it be a Dan Mullen type of guy? Could it be someone that you know, maybe that is actually there's more smoke to that than you see? Could it be a Gus Malzahn if he's not retained at UCF? So we'll have to see there. Not a whole lot of word on the defensive coordinator, but Mike Norvell did say that there are guys who are on track to be in the playoffs and in conference championships. And so they're going to see how that process plays out over the next couple of games. Kind of makes you think that, you know, as far as a DC standpoint, that it could be Scott Simons from SMU because they are on track to possibly end up in the playoffs. Maybe the co-DC from Oregon there because they're obviously probably going to make the playoffs there. Maybe some position coaches there as well, too. So this process may not happen super fast, but at least I think even if they're not residing in Tallahassee, you still may see some names emerge like, yes, I've accepted this job. I'm going to be there next year. So we're really just kind of waiting for the season to end so we can kind of know. But I do like that you're seeing some of the guys that are garnering interest in these positions are on playoff caliber teams because that's what we've said all along, man.
Right.
You can't take chances on these either. As much as the players, you can't take chances on the coaches. You need to go out and get some proven guys that know how to win games. So we'll see what the news breaks at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's such a tricky thing for Mike to be in these conversations with these coaches, really their agents with his agent and, you know, right. trying to figure that all out with AD Offer. And they're in the midst of a championship game run or they're in the midst of a college football playoff invitation. You know, I imagine if it's somebody who is not in one of those two, if they're not in a conference championship run or a playoff run, then whatever last game they're going to play, they're not going to worry necessarily about the bowl game mm-hmm. because you can't have a coach coaching another team is going to come on yours when you've got to do this recruiting and you've got to rebuild this roster. So I imagine that the coaches that they're talking to, you know, they're just trying to say, okay, can we lock this down? When can you be available? When can you come over? Right. And what that will look like. Cause you know, let's say it is a Brandon Marion. Well, obviously, he's not going to be in a conference championship. He's not. I mean, they might be in a conference championship, but they're not going to be in the playoffs because they're not a high-ranked group of five team. So that could be an easy switch over. But if it is somebody like the co-DC from Oregon or the DC from SMU, well, they're in conference championship mode right now, and they're in college football playoffs. So you might not be able to get them until the end of all of that.
Who knows? Yeah.
So that's all the trickiness of this.
Yeah, because you're not going to wait on Brandon Marion to go play in the Bahamas Bowl. You're just not going to do that. But you will. I mean, I understand respecting them being in the playoffs and things like that, because they're going to want to go do that. And that, I think that also helps, you know, when they come in, like say it is SMU and say you do take their defensive coordinator and they're coming off an ACC championship and they're coming off of, you know, a playoff berth, like that probably looks a little bit better as you hire that DC that they were able to do that. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a process that's gonna take a little bit to play out. I don't think you need to rush. I think you need to get it right, because obviously this recruiting class, like you said, it is what it is, but you would like to have them in place when the portal opens so guys know who they're gonna come play for. So the last thing I want to talk about before we get into that, and speaking of recruiting, obviously I'm sure most of you guys have seen the news that Byron Lewis just flipped to Florida as well. So this recruiting class again, you lost another one to your in-state rival. Man, like Michael said, just expect this class to be basically a nothing, you know, when you get in here. I'm sure they're going to try and add some guys. But, I mean, right now, man, that means there is zero running backs and zero wide receivers in this class. It's unacceptable at Florida State. And so I think this has got to be the last time you can accept something like this. But, you know, man, I think you bring that back to this game as we start to transition into on-the-field talk here is a win on Saturday would do so much for this program. I mean, with all that you've lost in recruiting and all that you've done this year, man, a win over Florida would be massive on Saturday. Not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, as we look back to last Saturday before we talk about this Saturday, because Michael wasn't on the postgame show because he was traveling, I want to get some of your thoughts on that Charleston Southern game here. You know, I want to say before, like, hear me say this, please. Please listen to me say this, because everybody got so mad when I thought that you could see some good stuff against a one-win FCS team. I know Charleston Southern is terrible. You know, how dare we disrespect the Charleston Southern University? But, like, man, college snaps for true freshmen. These guys were playing high school football last year. These things are invaluable for growth, right? We're not saying because they went and beat Charleston Southern that they're all of a sudden going to go out and, you know, be a playoff team next year or go win the Heisman. But these are good snaps for players who need the development. And I think you saw good things last week from this team. You hope that carries over into this Florida game, because, you know, I think more than anything, Michael, like, again, people, and I touched on this in the postgame show, people have to remember, like, football is it's a hard sport. You have to go out there and, you know, beat on each other and sweat 5 days a week or whatever, and go play the games on Saturday. They came into that game on a 6-game losing streak. Their mentality had to be absolute in the dumps. And so just to get a win, like, people were mad. So people were so triggered by us breaking the rock after the Charleston Southern game. And I'm like, one, you got to be consistent, right? You can't abandon your tradition because of a bad season. Two, man, did you see how much fun those guys were having in that locker room? Those guys needed anything positive. Anything positive. And so I think it's okay to, like, let them have some positivity for once on this season. I don't think anyone took away from that win like, oh, we're back. You know, we joked about it. We laughed about it. I don't think the players know Charleston Southern wasn't good either. They understand that. But they needed something positive to happen. But I think a perfect example of that is looking at Luke Cromanhawk. He's going to get his second start against Florida. And Norvell did talk about in his presser here about how you could see how things progressed a little bit, right? And so there was less looking at the sideline, more command of the offense. He started to make some checks. And that's what you're looking for, man, in a game like that. And I understand that while that was a bad opponent, look, everybody plays these games. Every team in FBS Power 5 plays these cupcake games. This is where you get young guys' experience. It just happens that young guys are our starters because we're having a bad season. But, you know, I mean, a 65% completion percentage, 203 yards, 3 touchdowns, his first collegiate touchdown of his career. He threw 3 of them in that game, 90.2 PFF grade. I think he was like the highest graded quarterback of the week for PFF. 4 big time throws, had some nice runs in that game. No one's crowning him the Heisman winner for beating Charleston Southern, but you saw some experience and you saw him start to gain some confidence. And that's what you want to see in a game like that. So, you know, they were still bad. We got pushed around by Charleston Southern's front a little bit early in that game, which is very concerning. And we're going to talk about that as we get into the Florida game. But, man, give me some thoughts on some things that you saw in that game. I will say one thing that I also thought was good for the Charleston Southern game is it gave the staff a chance to go through one game as not having the coordinators, not having Adam Fuller, not having Alex Atkins, not having Ron Dugans there. And for what it's worth, 72.7% completion percentage and no drops in that game. Now, I know you're saying it wasn't a good defense. We dropped wide open screen passes. So air was able to break up passes against us. So look, hey, I mean, that's something to see there. So, I mean, give me some thoughts on that Charleston Southern game.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, to what you said, Jesse, like it was Charleston Southern, guys. Like, we're not trying to pump sunshine up a cloudy day here for Florida State team. Like, that was a terrible team they played. But if you've played football at any point of your life, you know no win is guaranteed. You know, you could go – I mean, look at North Carolina. They just fired their coach because they lost 70 to something, 50, whatever it was, to James Madison, okay? And so you're just not guaranteed those types of wins. So you have to take the win wherever you can get it. And it's okay that they celebrated, you know, by breaking the rock. They're being consistent to their program. They were having fun. This was almost a full on youth movement of what we saw in this game. And so it wasn't the veterans that were coming back. They were breaking the rock that were celebrating. If you saw the picture, it was a lot of the younger guys in front of that celebrating, going crazy. And so you take that and you say, okay, let's build on that. Yes, it's Charleston Southern. I was pleased by what I saw from Luke. I thought he made some really good decisions. I thought the three touchdown pass, the best play of the game was that rollout to his right where he caught Jalen Lucas, you know, going Ja'Kai Douglas going down the sideline there. Ja'Kai Douglas breaks that and takes that for a touchdown. I thought, man, you know, we've been missing that. We didn't have that. I'm sorry, Brock, but Brock wasn't doing that either.
Right.
And so you saw that as well. You saw his legs come into use there. I thought he made some good checks, as Mike talked about. He did. He really checked them in some good plays there. Now, of course, it is Charleston Southern, but they were sending the house every which way. They were blitzing. They were sending exotic book pad. They were blitzing safeties. They were playing linebacker safety. They were bringing the wide out corner with the linebacker. I mean, they were trying every kind of way. And I know we're going to talk about this, but that line, gosh, helped them. That's terrible that Charleston Southern was able to get there. So that was something that stood out to me. And then at the end of the day, you're right. Like, be able to have a game where your two coordinators are no longer there to see how they call that game. I thought Randy, now listen, I'm not, don't hear me say I want him back. Don't hear me say that at all. But I actually thought he called a decent game as far as putting the players in the right kind of calls, you know, against that triple option that they run out of the shotgun for Charleston Southern. You know, I thought he called a decent game. And I thought the players showed up when it could have been easy, right, Jesse? We've talked about this.
Yeah.
It could have been very easy for them to just be like, whatever, I don't really care, the season's over, and they could possibly get beat. But no, they came out, they played hard, and I was happy that they played hard in this game. That's all I was happy about, that they played hard. I was not happy that we beat this terrible team to get our second win. I wasn't happy that we looked super great. I was just happy that they came out and they played hard.
Right, and I do think, like, when you look at it, man, the effort was, and I know this is sad to say, and again, this is not up to the Florida State standard. We understand all that, but I thought the effort was encouraging because we thought that the effort might be an issue in this game, right? Because, you know, a 130 kick against a one-win FCS team, but they actually came out and they played hard. And so, like we said, man, you would rather have Luke have a good game against a bad FCS team going into the Florida game than, you know, have a bad game against that team. So, but with that being said, man, let's transition into talking about this Florida game. Saturday night, 7 p.m. inside Doak Campbell Stadium. You know, we were talking about this before the show. I do think it's going to be a decent crowd for this game. We'll see. I think Florida fans are going to make that trip over because they think they're going to be able to break this two-game losing streak, you know, even if it took the worst team in 50 years to do it. So, but I do think, you know, based on ticket prices and things like that I've been looking at, I do think that the game will still be, you know, pretty packed. So we'll see how that goes. It is senior night, so it's going to be the last opportunity for a lot of these guys to get the play. I think they're going to play hard, man. I do. Like, I think it's being that a senior night, I know there's probably not going to be a lot of seniors playing in this game. You know, Mike might give them an opportunity here and there. But being that we saw a good effort against that Charleston Southern team, it's a rivalry game. It's the last game of the season. You saw them play hard against Miami, even though things didn't go the way we wanted. I think they are going to show up and play hard in this game. As we touched on, Florida is favored 14 by 14.5, a little over two touchdowns there, over under of 45.5. So not a real high scoring affair. That breaks down to about a 30-16 win for Florida. Another implied score I saw was around 31-18 on a computer model. So, you know, that's probably better than what I think a lot of us maybe expected coming off them beating Ole Miss and things like that. A couple of notes to touch on here. Roydell Williams does sound like he will be available in this game. Woohoo. That's probably going to unfortunately take some carries away from Lawrence Toa-Philly.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to pass that news along there, I don't know that he'll be 100%, so you might see him once or twice, but I don't think he'll get a lot of action in this game. You know, Michael, one of the things, and there's it's kind of hard to look at stats because things have been so bad for us, but I will say – again, I don't think either one of us are going to pick Florida State to win this game. But if you're looking for straws or paths for opportunities to Florida State for them to do well in this game, I do think it is worth saying that, like, Florida State had a bye before this Charleston Southern game.
Yeah.
I'm sure, as we know they do, they probably started installing for Florida during that bye week because you only had so much you needed to game plan for Charleston Southern. You also saw them lay some starters out in that game to probably give them rest. I feel like that's probably what a lot of that was for some guys who may have been nicked up. You also saw the starters for Florida State only played about half the snaps in that Charleston Southern game. So you should be fresh. You should be well-rested for this game. The young guys who needed to get the snaps, they got the snaps. Yeah. The older guys didn't have to play a whole lot. You know, Florida's coming off a hard-fought game against Ole Miss where they were in a dogfight to the end of the game. So, you know, if you're looking for the little things in this game, I think that may be a little bit of an advantage for Florida State. You're at home. You know, like we talked about, you had a game to get used to not having your coordinators of Randy calling the defense and things like that. So I think that will, you know, maybe help this game a little bit with the communication aspect of things. Florida is 1-2 in road games, with their only road win being against also 2-9 Mississippi State team. Right. So they have definitely played better at home. Now, to give them credit, their two road losses were at Texas and a neutral site against Georgia. So they were, you know, those are really tough games there. I really think, like, just overall thoughts on this game. I think if Florida State comes into this game and plays hard. Now, again, like we talked about this before, I don't want to take anything away from what Florida has done, right? They have got a couple good wins under their belt. They've overachieved compared to what we thought they were going to do this year. You know, we were thinking somewhere like, you know, 3 to 5 wins coming into this game, possibly on a 7-game losing streak. Billy Napier might not even be the coach. They have the momentum. I will give them that. But I do think if Florida State's defense plays hard, this Florida offense, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, is not really, really dynamic. They have a true freshman quarterback too, although he's a good one. I think that you can make this a game, right? I don't think this game has to be a blowout. I don't know that you're going to win, but I don't think it has to be a blowout either if you show up and play hard.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think if Florida State can show up and put all their effort into just trying to contain, make this quarterback actually think. I mean, remember, DJ Lagwe is a true freshman. This is not some seasoned veteran that's playing. He's a true freshman. And you look at the games that he's played where he struggled, it's when the defense gave him complicated looks to have. Now, I know Randon Shannon and Mike Norvell has been saying they want to simplify the defense. They want to get the players in so they can play fast. Okay, well, let's do that, but let's give him some things to think about. If we can do that and slow down the running game, which is their bread and butter, if we can slow down the running game, I think Florida State can find themselves potentially in a game in the fourth quarter. But if they come out and they allow DJ to get outside the pocket, they allow the running game to pick up 5, 6, 7 yards per carry, they allow early scores, you're going to see what you've seen every time on the other side of this, which is, and if the offense is not scoring, then you're going to see what we've seen every time, which is by the, you know, second, third quarter, that defense starts to get tired, get wilting. The offense is not scoring. Florida can run away with this. Absolutely. I think you will see that if it doesn't happen. But if Florida State can slow down the running game and confuse DJ up front, make him have to think, make him have to make some checks, then I think you can see Florida State potentially in a game going in the fourth quarter. And we all know if you can get a game in the fourth quarter, anything's possible.
Right. I just think the hard part in this game, and we'll talk about this in a second, is just going to be scoring points with your offensive line, because their defensive line has been good. But, you know, back to what I was saying, when you talk about this Florida team, again, like, I don't want to take away what they've achieved. That Ole Miss win was huge for them. They beat LSU. That was a good win for them too. But again, like I said, man, it's funny because, like I said, I joked in the opening about they were, you know, the proudest 6-win team that I've ever seen. I've already seen comments that they think they're going to be a playoff team next year. We'll see. Maybe pump the brakes on that a little bit. You know, they're getting geared up. They just want to get. I don't think they're going to overlook Florida State in this game because they know it's a rivalry. They know it would be an embarrassing loss. You know, I know they got that massive Tax Slayer Bowl to prepare for after this. But I think when you look at the schedule, like, you know, when you look at their wins, man, their combined opponent record for wins, even with the last two games, is 29-37. Mm. You know, they beat a 4-7 FCS team, a 2-9 Mississippi State, a 4-7 team, a 4-7 team, a 7-4 LSU, who really, when you think about it, has really no good wins this season. I mean, LSU is probably they're probably madder at their coach than Florida was. And think about, you know, keep in mind, too. And then, of course, they beat an 8-3 Ole Miss.
Right.
But, you know, if you think about it like this, Florida made the announcement to retain Billy Napier between that right after the Georgia game before the Texas game because they played hard in that game. Like, they lost, but they played hard. Every Florida fan and page, well, that I saw anyway, were mad about that. They wanted him fired. They were like, we're not serious about football and all this stuff. And then two wins. Change the entire now they're a playoff team and they love Billy all of a sudden. So, you know, just keep that part in mind. And they did get dog walked by that Texas team and you know by a couple of teams there. But, you know, again, they're a hot team right now. They're coming off of that game. They're a different team. I will say they're a different team than what they faced, you know, what we saw against that Miami team in to open the season there where they got blown out by Miami. It's a different team now. They are playing better. Right. So, like you said, man, I could see this one. It could get out of hand if Florida State doesn't show up to play hard. But I do think they will play hard being that it's a rivalry game. I think Mike Norvell knows how much this game means.
Yeah.
We saw that in the press conference. Look, he said, like, they don't like us. We don't like them.
Right.
I think another aspect of this game is like, man, you got nothing to lose. This is it. You are 2-9. There is no reason that you should not kick an onside. There's no reason you shouldn't go for a couple of fourth downs, fake a punt. There's no reason you shouldn't do some flea flickers and some trickery. There is zero reason not to do that. Now, I'm not saying like go for it on fourth from your own 20 or anything like that, but there's no reason you shouldn't pull out all the stops. All the pressure's on Florida. This is going to be a national pantsing on TV if they lose to us. No one expects us to win. So pull out all the stops, man. You got nothing to lose.
Absolutely. And I think the key word right there is what you said, that phrasing. All the pressure is on them. Nobody believes Florida State can win this game, will win this game. Florida State is a 2-9 team that has losses to Boston College and SMU and Miami and Duke and Georgia Tech. And I mean, we can keep going on and on. Like, this is not a good team. And you're a team who just literally beat Ole Miss and LSU back-to-back. You know, have some other whatever wins early in the season, your season is not as bad as everybody had projected, including us. I mean, we thought Billy would have been fired within the first five games of the season.
Right.
We thought this would be a terrible season for them. And yet they've proven everybody wrong. They've proven everybody wrong. They've won the games that they should have won. And they've played some games and win that they shouldn't have won. So yeah, all the pressure is on them. So for Florida State, I mean, you come out pressure free. You come out and have fun. I mean, if the ball is on your 45 and it's a fourth down and it's not fourth and long, go for it. Yeah. Run some flea flickers. Like you said, run a punt Ruski. We haven't seen it in such a long time, right? I mean, throw some crazy stuff. Do the Dan Lanning thing. You know, I mean, gosh, put somebody extra on the field and make them make a blow up tackle against DJ. And he can't come back for the rest of the game. He's not injured. He just can't come back from the rest of the game. It's the same thing we said against Miami, man. Go punch somebody in the face for crying out loud. Not like literally, but like, you know, metaphorically. Like, go out there and just play your hardest. Because for Florida, they got to win this game.
Yeah.
Because everything, all the goodwill they've built up in these two games goes out the window.
Oh, man.
If they lose this game, the Florida State. And for Florida State, no – we're not expecting you to win. So if you win, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the fan base would be mad, but at least we're going into the offseason with some positivity. But let's talk about that Florida offense real quick. So you look at this team, man, they had two games where they scored 40-plus. That was kind of their explosive offense for the season. Other than that, they're averaging, other than those two games, and then you factor out the FCS Samford, because I know we're bad, but, you know, hey, look, we just dog walked a FCS team, so we're going to throw that game out the window too. But if you take out the FCS team and those two 40-point games, they average around 21 points a game. Now, that's not to say they can't have an offensive explosion against us and score 40 points too, but more often than not, they're scoring high teens to mid-low 20s than they are the 40s there. And I will say, in the one game where they scored 40-plus against Mississippi State, that was with Graham Mertz at quarterback. He threw three touchdowns there. The one game where they scored 40-plus against Kentucky, that was a five-touchdown game by the running back. Lagway did not throw a touchdown in either one of those 40-plus point games. So just keep that in mind. Again, things have changed for them throughout the season, too. They do average around 150 on the ground, so not the greatest rushing offense, but like you said, with a freshman quarterback, they're going to lean on that rushing offense.
Right.
Talking about DJ Lagway here, you know, again, man, he's a really talented freshman, and you can see why he was, you know, everybody said this. We talked about this a lot in the preseason, where it's like, if there's something that's going to save Billy Napier's job, it's going to be DJ Lagway. And that's think because Graham Mertz went down with injury and they've been forced to play him, now they were already playing him, but because they've been forced to make him his starter, you see the progression. You see the future with DJ Lagway. So, I mean, he's looked pretty good. 1,477 yards on the season so far. But really, I mean, again, like you said, he's still a true freshman. Only 9 touchdowns to a 6 interception ratio there. That's not really, really great, especially when you consider 3 of those touchdowns came against that FCS team in Samford. So, really, in FBS games, we're like a 6-touchdown, 6-interception ratio there. So he's only thrown multiple touchdowns, 2, in one other game this season. Now, that just happened to be the last one against Ole Miss, but he's either been 0 or 1 throughout the rest of the game. So he's looking good, but he's not lighting teams up from the quarterback position either. And I do think that's why this game spread is what it is, because I don't think that Florida offense is electric. I think our defense has been suspect at times, but I think it wouldn't be unrealistic to expect to hold them to mid-20s or under 30. Completion percentage for Lagway is between 50 to 60%, so not super high there. He did have a good game against Ole Miss. Not a huge runner, but he is mobile and can move the pocket to avoid sacks. Only averages around 10 to 15 yards per game, with sacked 3 times against Ole Miss. So, you know, man, this offense is better than ours, obviously, because our offense is terrible, but it's not the most dynamic offense. It is still a true freshman quarterback who has looked like a true freshman at times. You just wonder, you know, how we're going to do to stop that in this game. But again, man, like I said, if the defense shows up to play and you put, like you mentioned, you can put him in some tough situations, I think you can realistically hold Florida under 30 points. Now, will it happen? I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, who do we see, like a Notre Dame type of defense? Because remember, like, Miami's one of the best offenses in college football, and you held them to 36 points with a late score. So I think this is not Miami's offense. So you could expect to probably hold them somewhere under 30 points. It's just, will it happen?
I think, just from my research of this team, is, you know, Florida is ranked 79th in the country in rushing per game. They give up they gain, like you said, about 150 yards per rush, or 150 yards per game on the ground, with about 4.3 yards per rush. The problem is, and why I think this is a key to the game, is Florida State is ranked 105th in the country on rush defense, and they're giving up 4.5 yards per game. And 180 yards on the ground. That's going to be the key to the game, because what you have to try to do at least for Florida State defense is, you got to try to make Lagway beat you with his arm. That's what you got to do. You got to put this on the defensive secondary, and you're going to just tell them, hey, you're going to be on an island for a lot of this game, because we're going to stop the run. We are going to make him beat us with your arm. That, I think that's the only chance you got at trying to get this game to the fourth quarter, is making him be the star of the game. If he's going to be a hero, he's going to be the Superman, they're going to put all their hopes in, then make him go out there and prove it.
Yeah.
And you've got to put 6 to 7 people in the box, and you're just committing. We are not going to let you run the ball. You're going to have to throw it on us, and you're going to have to win it.
Yeah, and I think you're going to have to put pressure on Lagway too. You know, bring the heat, man, and hopefully that's something that Randy Shannon will dial up for them. Because again, yeah, I mean, you got nothing to lose. And like you said, if you end up, if the true freshman quarterback has a 300-yard, 3-touchdown game, and you end up losing, hey, man, it is what it is, right?
Right.
But you can't give them the easy stuff, and so I think that's what you need to do as well. So talking about the Florida defense here. Now, you know, they got Bobby Hill, the defensive coordinator there. So they're multiple. They do all kinds of things. But this defense it's been up and down, right? They've given up. I mean, they got absolutely dog walked there by Texas, who does have a pretty decent offense. They're giving up 25.5 points per game, so not bad there, but they did hold Ole Miss and LSU to under 20 points apiece. Now, we know, again, like when you look at those games, man, they scored, 24 against Ole Miss and 27 against LSU. We know both of those teams don't play great defense, but they did hold two good offenses under 20 points in back-to-back weeks, and so that's what concerns me, right? They're top 25 in sacks. They're 87th in run defense, giving up around 161 yards a game. They're 107th in pass defense, giving up 245 yards through the air. But they're 12th in red zone defense. So they give up some yardage, but they don't let you score a whole lot. They're only plus one in turnover margin. And like we said, they've held two better offenses than yours to under 20 points in the last two games. And so that's what worries me the most is, like, even if your defense plays well, can you score enough points to win? Now, obviously, you broke 21 last week for the first time. That's great. This is a whole different level of competition this week. And the one thing that worries me more than anything is I'm supposed to be recording later today with a friend of mine who covers Florida, and he says really the difference for them over the last few games is that their defensive line has really come to life. Yeesh, if you're a Florida State fan, you know that's the one thing you did not want to hear because, again, we struggled to push around Charleston Southern. And, you know, they got a couple of really big guys on that defensive line. So if that defensive line has a good game and eats, you're in trouble. And so, this Florida defense is not scary. It's not like a Notre Dame defense. It's not probably even a Clemson defense. But it's not a bad defense. And so you're going to have to – this game, in my opinion, Michael, is going to come down to the line of scrimmage. Period, especially on that offensive side of the ball. If you can't protect Luke Kromenhawk, if you cannot run the ball at all to take some pressure off of him, you're done because you're not going to score more than 10, 12, 13 points. But if you can give him some time to make some throws, if you can run the ball at all, I think you can put yourself in this game. But this is what worries me the most is just you're not going to be able to block that defensive front. And I know they're going to look at that Charleston Southern film, and I know you're like, why would you look at Charleston Southern film? Look, they're going to see. They're going to go, hey, they got a true freshman. They have a bad offensive line. They're going to do exactly what we just talked about. They are going to put pressure on Luke Kromenhawk to win this game. They're going to bring the heat. They are going to send the house because they know you can't block them.
That's right. Well, and the thing is, if you go back, go all the way back to 20 – let's go back to 2011. That's Jimbo – or 2010. Let's go back to 2010. That's Jimbo's first season at Florida State, okay? Jimbo's first season. Since that time, Florida State is 9-4 against Florida, okay? And in all of 13 games, the team that can run the ball the best is the team that ends up winning the game, okay? That's just been true for those last 13 games. The team that can run the ball the best ends up winning the game. Florida, as you said, is 80th in the country, somewhere around 80th in rushing yards given up?
Yeah, 87th in run defense, about 161 a game.
Correct. Florida State is, last I check, is 128th in the country in running the ball with 89 yards per game. Okay? Youch.
Yeah.
That, again, I know I keep harping on it. That's the key to this game on both sides of the ball. Like you said, it's a line of scrimmage. If that offensive line for Florida State is allowing so much pressure in the backfield that we can't even get open holes to run the ball, which means then we're getting so much pressure that Luke can't set his feet. He can't make accurate reads. He can't make accurate throws. He can't check well because he's not sure if the line is going to block here. His eyes are staying down, so he can't keep his eyes looking up to see who's open out there. This is going to be a long, long day for this Florida State offense, because that defensive line for Florida has gotten better and better as the season has progressed for them. You've seen that. You saw that in the Ole Miss game. You saw that in the LSU game. They were constantly living in the backfield. They were stopping the run, which was then forcing those quarterbacks to make bad decisions, to get out on the perimeter to try to do that. And their secondary, while it's not the best secondary in the world, is decent enough to hold up against that. And so Florida State, Mike is going to have to figure out how to get this offense moving. I mean, you're going to have a lot of maybe some empty boots, maybe some, every time they throw that ball to the wide receiver screen, it gets blown up every daggum time because there was one time in the Charleston Southern game where they threw a wide receiver screen and I think it was Akeem Williams literally just went like this, let the guy go by, and he got blown up. The wide receiver got blown up in the backfield, and the commentator was like, who was a Florida State alum, was like, nah, you got to block better than that, man. Yeah. Come on. I mean, when the commentator in a Charleston Southern game is calling you out,
I know
that's a bad thing. And so if they act like that in that Florida game, this will be a long day for that offense.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I think you can find success, but it's going to start up front. And that's the thing. Like, I know people get upset about this year, you know, hasn't been turned around. But look, man, this thing isn't going to get turned around until you fix this offensive line. And correct. You know, I've done the episode from way back, the trouble in the trenches and all that stuff. I encourage you to go watch it. But 90% of this team's problems comes from this offensive line. And correct. Until you fix that, we're going to struggle. And that's not going to happen this year. So it's not going to happen all of a sudden magically in this Florida game. So correct. That's going to be the key, is can you do enough up front to be able to move the ball and score some points? And I just don't know, man. So with that being said, we'll wrap this up with some predictions and kind of how we see this thing going. You know, again, man, like I said, look, Florida has overachieved compared to what we thought they were going to do. It's year three under Billy Napier. I mean, they're still a 6-win team in year three. So, you know, that's probably not the standard that most of them are happy about, but they've got some good wins under their belt. The last two games, like we said, before that LSU game, they had not beat a team with a winning record yet. So there is some smoke and mirrors with this team. You know, I came into the season, I did say that I thought their schedule was tough, but I was one of the very few people who said I thought Florida was a better team than people expected, yep, than people thought right. they were. And I've also said that I think Billy Napier is a better coach than people think he is. But again, man, I do think they're outside of, you know, congrats for the Ole Miss and the LSU win, but I still think this team is not great, right? They're good. They're playing hot right now, but they're not great. So I could see a situation where Florida State comes out, plays inspired football. You know, Luke is going to be your starter. He got the game reps last week, which is going to help for this week. They got to feel a little bit more buoyed mentally coming into this game after getting a win, no matter the opponent. I think you can make Florida sweat. I think you can make this a dogfight that goes into the fourth quarter. Unfortunately for me, Michael, look, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be mad when it plays out the way it might. It is what it is. I just think this game's going to come down to one main factor, right? Really two. And one of these I know you're probably going to talk about because you told me about it in the post-game, in the pre-show. DJ Lagway has started against really good teams, right? He's That's played right. in big games against Ole Miss and LSU. Luke Kromenhawk has played spot duty, but he's never really started in a big game. He's only started against Charleston Southern. So there's that aspect. And then the main thing for me is I just don't think we're going to be able to block that defensive front. I just don't. Yeah. Not effectively enough to score enough points to beat Florida. Now, I think you can keep it closer than some people think, but – with that being said, Michael, I have Florida winning this game something around probably 31-13. I do think you score a little bit. I do think you're going to let some field goals. You're going to be able to get some field goals off. Hey, look, maybe it comes on a trick play. Maybe it comes on a special teams play. Maybe it comes on a big defensive play. Who knows? But I do think Florida wins this game about 31-34-13.
Yeah, I think that's a fair score. Listen, like you said, I think for me the biggest factor here is two things. There are two factors of why I'll go with three. Let's go with three. Number one is when I look at this offensive line for Florida State and I look at this defensive line for Florida, it gives me great concern that the defensive line for Florida has progressed better. It's trending up and to the right as the season has gone on, where the offensive line started poor and has made and basically stayed poor the entire time, including the Charleston Southern game. There were way too many times that a team that terrible was living in the backfield. And I just can't trust that offensive line. I think, too, you already mentioned it, is that DJ Lagway has played in some big-time games. This was Luke's first start, okay? He's played in some games, but this was his first start and against a terrible Charleston Southern team. Lagway has played against Ole Miss. He played against LSU. He's played against other big time, played against Texas. He's played in big games. He's proven himself in big games to be the more consistent quarterback. And I think that's it. And then lastly, you're right. This is a Dollar General fan base. Yeah. This ain't a Walmart fan base. This ain't a Target fan base. They're Dollar General. But Jesse, let me tell you, Dollar General has some really good cookies that I love to get. The oatmeal cream pie cookies, they're delicious. I call them poor people cookie because they're delicious and they're super cheap. So I just, I can't get over the fact of those three things. So I got Florida winning 31-7. I think Florida State gets a touchdown somewhere in there. Now, I will say, I do believe that Florida State goes into halftime only down. I think the score is around 14-7. I think they'll come out inspired early. But I think as time wears on, that offense is not scoring. That defense just gets tired. They're just like, you know, it's the end of the season, whatever. And I think Florida takes over.
Kind of the same thing we've seen play out throughout the season. And I'll say this, man. I really honestly do believe, like, it's as simple because that offensive line is so bad.
Yeah.
I believe it's as simple as if you made these two teams trade offensive lines before kickoff, I think Florida State wins this game.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it really comes down to that offensive line is so bad and their defensive front is playing well right now. So, yeah, man. I mean, like I said, I could see a dogfight. I could see them keeping this closer than the experts think, as Lee Corso likes to say. But I just think, like you said, over time it's going to wear them down, and I don't think we win this one. So, with that being said, guys, I will be at this game. Like I mentioned, we're going to be tailgating in Lot 7. That is right by where the baseball field is by the circus tents. And so if you are there in Tallahassee for this game, make sure you stop by and say, hey, I'll post about it when we get down there and get set up. Because like we said, it is a night game. So we'll be set up nice and early there. So we'd love to meet and greet with you guys and see you guys. Look, guys, this is it. This is the last one. Thankfully, this painful season is coming to an end, and we can look forward to the offseason and getting things fixed for 2025. So with that being said, we'll call it here, guys. For those of you who are going to be watching this throughout the week, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We hope you enjoy that holiday. Look, that's my holiday, Michael, because I love to eat. So I am looking forward to that. So, yeah, man, with that being said, we appreciate you guys watching. Make sure you check out today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. Make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. Drop a like and subscribe. We've got a pretty good jump in subscribers here lately, so we appreciate you guys rocking with us throughout this terrible season. You're going to want to stay tuned because, like we said, things are really about to heat up as the clock hits zero after this Florida game. So make sure you do that. Rate and review on the podcast. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you after this one. So thanks for watching, and as always, go Noles.
Go Noles.